This is Rush to Reason.
You are going to shut your damn yapper and listen for a change, because I got you pegged, sweetheart. You want to take the easy way out because you're scared. And you're scared because if you try and fail, there's only you to blame. Let me break this down for you. Life is scary. Get used to it. There are no magical fixes.
With your host, John Rush.
My advice to you is to do what your parents did. Get a job, sir.
You haven't made everybody equal. You've made them the same, and there's a big difference.
Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there. It is this feeling that has brought you to me.
Are you crazy?
Am I? Or am I so sane that you just blew your mind?
It's Rush to Reason with your host, John Rush. Presented by High Five Plumbing, where every call ends with a high five.
All right, we are back. Hour number three, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. As I said a moment ago, Shaka Mitchell joining us now. Shaka, welcome to Rush to Reason. How are you?
I'm doing well, John. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I appreciate it very much. I kind of promoted this a moment ago. We've got some things going on in Colorado right now. House Bill 241363. Explain what that is.
Yeah, so this House bill is really, frankly, to state it plainly, it's an attack on charter schools in Colorado. It's an attack on parent choice and agency in Colorado. And it really threatens to undermine 30 years of good work that's happened across the state with these schools.
You also work with the American Federation for Children. We are a huge school choice proponent here, Shaka. Really, personally, most people know this by now. I'm pretty anti-public school. I realize there might be a few good ones out there, but most of them are not. They're run by individuals that I vehemently disagree with. Charter schools, I think, are a step in at least the right direction, but it sounds to me like in this particular case, they're under threat.
Yeah, that's right. They are under threat. And, you know, the sad thing, but maybe not super surprising, is that the sponsors of the bill talk a really good game, and we can get into who those members of the legislature
are. Sure, go ahead. No, mention it. Go ahead. Let's get started there. Go for it.
Yeah, so you've got Representatives Lorena Garcia, Representative Tammy Story, and then Senator Lisa Cutter. And, you know, I did some research on them. I've been to their websites. I've seen the kinds of bills that they've introduced. And they all three talk a really good game about how much they care about kids, how much they care about parents.
Mm-hmm.
So then you've got to wonder, well, if this is what caring's like, it's like with friends like this, who needs enemies, right? Because what they are fundamentally trying to do is shut down schools that parents have chosen as sort of exit ramps from a conventional public school system that was failing their kids.
Okay, so, and I've not read the bill. I apologize. I was super busy today, and I was meaning to read this prior to you coming on. Essentially, what does this bill do?
Yeah, let me tell you, and you can be forgiven because the thing is 55 pages.
Oh, I don't feel so bad now.
So you can be forgiven. It does a number of things. Let me just mention a few of them.
Okay.
So, you know, as you know, most charter schools in Colorado and really indeed across the country are approved or denied by local school
boards. Correct.
One of the things that this bill would do is it would give local school boards the ability to revoke a charter if the district enrollment is decreasing.
Okay, so let me get this straight. So if, as a whole, the district, which, by the way, in Colorado, a lot of districts are seeing this. There's all sorts of reasons we may or may not have time to get into. But bottom line, a lot of enrollment is being lowered across a lot of districts. So what this is saying that, say, charter school A is doing well, the attendance is up. In fact, there might even be a waiting list to get in. That doesn't mean anything, because if the district as a whole is losing students, they could still close down that charter.
Correct.
Okay.
They could revoke the charter. It's totally irrational. I mean, these are things that are beyond any school leader's control, right?
Right.
And so you're allowing a competitor, basically, to shut down its competitor because its own business model is doing poorly. So that's one thing that the bill does. Another thing that the bill does is it really elevates, I'm sure your listeners are familiar with this kind of NIMBY term, right? That not in my backyard.
Yep.
It sort of elevates the role of the NIMBY neighbor. And the way it does that is that it says, in the event that a local school board approves the charter application, that says, all right, great, a new charter school can start in our county, in our district, it allows anyone in the district, any person in the district, to file an appeal.
Oh, geez.
To appeal that decision. So now you're talking about wasting time, yep. wasting the resources. Frankly, the time to me is perhaps the most frustrating thing because, kids, you're only going to get 1 year in third grade, right? And so
right.
if it takes so much time that it delays the school opening,
correct.
That's precious time.
Correct. And Shaka, really, I'm going to try to see if you can move maybe to a little different area. I'm getting a little bit of you breaking up. We can still hear you, but I want people to really understand and hear this. This is big, big stuff because I want to make sure that I'm hearing this correctly as well. So in other words, I live in Jeffco. So I'm on kind of the northwest end of Jeffco. So if I, as a citizen, hear about a charter school going in maybe on clear the opposite end of where I live, because I'm a citizen of Jeffco, I could still file an appeal even though it won't affect me at all.
Correct. Absolutely.
Okay.
Even if you have no kids, even if you're a renter and you don't even pay property taxes, right?
Wow.
We're going to let you file an appeal just because you've got sort of a burr in your saddle. And
yeah. Wait. Which, by the way, Shaka, there. I mean, I quick story. I did a lot of work for a church that I was a member of for quite some time. I was on the land committee, and we were doing some development and different things and so on. And I can tell you firsthand, and I don't care. I'll name names. This is in Broomfield County because this happened to be up in the Broomfield area. And I will tell you, this person's no longer there. The city manager that was there then is not there any longer. But I will tell you straight up, Shaka, that the city manager told me straight up, we don't like private schools, and we don't even like charter schools. We have to do it because the state says so. But if we didn't have to, we wouldn't. That's coming right from the horse's mouth of admin at that time, City of Broomfield.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we hear that and see that around the country. American Federation for Children, we work in states around the country, and we run into hostile public school administrators wherever we go. And I'll say this. Listen, there are some great educators in public schools. There are some great administrators.
Right.
I think even they get frustrated. And frankly, charter schools are one of the first places.
They're one of the outlets,
that they go.
That's right.
It's an outlet. That's exactly right. And, this proposed bill, 24-1363, another thing it would do, it would allow local school boards to issue a moratorium even on charter schools. So they could issue a moratorium if they can show that they might have decreased enrollment at some point within the next 3 years, they can issue a moratorium. And it's like, nobody's got that crystal ball. You can't look.
Well, what they're trying to do, Shaka, and you already know this. You said it earlier, they're basically trying to eliminate any of their competition. In the case of this particular bill, they're trying to eliminate what I wouldn't even call competition. It is low-performing competition, and the way they're protecting that low competitor is by eliminating the high competitor.
That's right. And, the reality is, though, parents are getting wise to this. Mm. And so, try as they might, school districts can't eliminate the true parent power to find options. So parents are finding this, whether it's through charter schools, there's more than 280 in Colorado, whether it's through private school choice, right?
Yep.
Education savings, accounts, vouchers, tax credits, et cetera. And frankly, whether it's through homeschooling, and that means really creative opportunities like micro-schooling, doing things online. If parents are fed up with the district, if a district doesn't improve its quality and improve its product, parents will find another option. And frankly, sometimes that option maybe to cross a state line and
correct.
Just move a few miles and find better opportunity.
I mean, I hate to tell these people this, and maybe we shouldn't. Number one, I don't want to see this happen, by the way, because I think there's some good that happens in the charter school end of things, because it does become an alternative where folks are tired of the public school side of it. They want something different. They maybe can't afford or just don't have the ability to do full private schooling. But Shaka, all this is going to do is put a shot in the arm to private schooling and homeschooling.
It absolutely is. And, thinking about just the state of Colorado, you've got now so many of your neighboring states have got choice programs, right?
Yeah.
Utah has got a universal education savings account program.
Right.
Wyoming just passed a program. Nebraska last year passed.
Doesn't Arizona have one as well?
Kansas has got one. Arizona's got one.
Okay.
Oklahoma's got one. So, boy, it really runs the risk of falling behind. And, you know, I if you believe, again, with the sponsors of this bill say in person and on their website that they care about families,
no, they don't.
This is not the way you show it. Yeah.
No. Well, yeah. And really, I think in the end, Shaka, if they're not careful, this could end up backfiring. They're already starting to see lower enrollment rates in a lot of districts. There's all sorts of reasons why people aren't having kids like they once were, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
A lot of the policies that we've got in place from, you know, abortion on. I mean, I could talk about that for an entire hour as to why enrollment is down. Bottom line is enrollment's down. This they're thinking this is going to keep enrollment in the rest of the public school system up. I hate to tell them it's not.
Yeah, that's right. It reminds me, John, a little bit of you probably heard this quote by Winston Churchill. He says, you know, a nation that tries to tax itself into prosperity is like a man who stands inside a bucket and tries to lift it up on a handle.
Right.
Right. That to me is what sometimes public district advocates are trying to do. They're trying to sort of basically say, listen, maybe if we get everything to be super bad, people will come back.
That didn't work.
People are going to find another way.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. Sure. All right. How do folks find you, the work that you guys are doing, and how can they support you?
Yeah, well, we'd love for folks to go to federationforchildren.org, federationforchildren.org, learn more about what we're up to. And I'd also say visit coloradoparents.org, coloradoparents.org, because there's going to be a rally on April 10th. Talking about this bill, just sort of uniting for all forms of school choice and making sure that parents have their voices heard.
Okay. I'll get these links up, and I appreciate that very much. Shaka, thanks for joining us. Any updates come up, let us know. We'll get you back on.
Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. No, have a great night. We appreciate it very much. K&R Home Transitions, take the stress out of buying and selling a home today. There will be changes, no matter what any realtor says, by the way, coming down the pike when it comes to realtors and how that works, how it functions, how it's going to work on the buyer and seller side. And I will tell you right now, they are very abreast. K&R is very abreast of those things, those changes that will be coming. And if you want to know how that's going to end up working, give them a call and they'll work with you on all of that and explain all of that as well. Now, on top of that, talk about the re-up program with them. Find out if you've got a particular home that might need some remodeling done. How would that work? How would it work for you specifically? How do you net more money at the end of the day? And then again, bottom line, they'll take the stress out of buying and selling. They are also that save the day realtor. So if you've thought, hey, I might have to actually do foreclosure because I just can't make ends meet, they've got answers for you on that as well. They had a story last Friday when they were on of saving somebody from that, keeping them in their home, and really keeping them in that home indefinitely. They've got answers. Give them a call today, 720-437-8210, or find them at klzradio.com. That's K&R Home Transitions. And Flesh Law is up next. He is my attorney. He would love to be yours as well. He'll work with you, civil, criminal, doesn't matter, 303-806-8886.
Personal injury attorney Kevin Flesh of Flesh & Beck Law has a unique background that makes him a more effective advocate for you. He handles both criminal and civil cases. Most attorneys only do one or the other, but Kevin has almost 25 years of experience on both sides, which means he has more practice in the courtroom. Most personal injury attorneys will say they have experience in court, but since only about 10% of personal injury cases actually go to trial, those attorneys only appear in court once or twice a year. Because Kevin also takes criminal cases, he appears in court constantly. Kevin has a rare ability to present an argument that only comes from years of experience learning how to read a courtroom. Personal injury attorney Kevin Flesh continues to practice both civil and criminal defense because he believes the courtroom keeps him nimble. Trial tested, trial ready. Kevin Flesh of Flesh & Beck Law. Schedule a free consultation now at 303-806-8886.
All right, Level Engineering, Alan Davis. Find out if solar is a good fit for you, your home, your budget, your electric bill. Find him today at klzradio.com.
If you live in Colorado and do not have solar, Alan Davis with Level Engineering will save you money on your electricity bill. Without having solar installed, you're missing out on one of the great benefits of living in Colorado. When you own your own home, solar is a no-brainer because you can lower your monthly utility bill. Lock in your rate to pay for the solar panels, around 5%, and miss the 10 to 20% annual power bill increase. Looking at your utility bills, you'll see that your power comes from a coal plant hundreds of miles away. Over 50% of your bill is for transporting that electricity from the plant to your home, farm, or business. It's like ordering a pizza for $20, and when it gets to you, the delivery driver tells you to pay $55 due to the $35 delivery charge. You wouldn't do that. So why would you pay more with your power bill? Lower your utility bills and increase the equity in your home. Call Alan Davis at 303-378-7537 to learn how he can help you. Or go to klzradio.com/solar.
This is Rush to Reason on KLZ 560.
All right, working along those same lines of schools, funding of, and so on. And that last bill, by the way, bad bill. Yeah, just because a district's attendance goes down should not give anyone, especially a school board, the right to close charter schools, who, by the way, might be performing very, very well and have a waiting list. Bottom line, it wouldn't matter if they felt like they still wanted to close down that charter school, they could. And trust me when I say this, there are a lot of people at not only the legislative level, but at the school board level, city council level, county commissioner level, and so on, that absolutely despise charter schools. They see them as competition to the public school system, and they don't like it. They were forced, quote unquote, to have them years ago, and if they had their way, they wouldn't. If I'm not mistaken, in Colorado especially, I believe, charter schools came about through a petition on the ballot, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think that was anything done legislatively. It's sort of like Tabor. They have it, they have to deal with it, but if they can figure out any other ways around it, they will, and this is one of them. And I'm not wrong, by the way, in what I just said. There are many, an administrator inside of cities, counties, etc., that absolutely despise charter schools, and if they could shut every one of them down, they absolutely would. Now, on top of that, there's another bill that was introduced Friday that would boost the per pupil funding. In this particular article, it says, but likely not enough to keep up with other states. So in other words, they want to increase funding per student in rural areas. Now, before I get into the details of this, which I may not have time to get into every detail, bottom line, it would increase the funding per student by about $420, upping it to about $8,500 in rural areas. They call it they're committed, by the way, to paying off debt that it owes to schools, known as the budget stabilization factor. Now, I've said this many, many times. I'll keep saying it. We spend far too much money per student as it is. Shouldn't take that much to educate a student. The average, by the way, in Colorado, rural schools are a little bit less, but keep in mind the cost of living and the cost of doing business in those areas is less than it is in other areas. But on average in Colorado, it's about $11,000 a student. Pretty close to that. I didn't do the math in this last year, but previous years it was about $11,000 a student. It's pretty much what we spend in Colorado. Keep in mind, coast to coast, our test scores and what our kids are learning continues to degrade. It's not going up. It's going down. Now, the liberals will tell you, well, that's because we don't spend enough money. BS. Wrong. Wrong answer. The problem is we spend the money on the wrong things. We spend it on all sorts of woke garbage that shouldn't be in the classroom in the first place. We spend it on administrators. I just gave you an example of a St. Louis school that wants to hire a $200,000 person to do nothing more than make sure that everybody there is a racist. Yeah, I know they're trying to do it different than that, but that's essentially what's going to happen. I could go into any school district anywhere in the country, but especially here in Colorado, and cut their budget by 15%, if not more, easily. Easily. And I'm just a regular old business guy. I don't have any MBAs or PhDs or anything along those lines, but I could go in and cut the budget very easily and still make that school district operate just fine. And by the way, probably at the end of the day, give teachers a raise. There's all sorts of ways that can happen. The administrative cost in Colorado to keep school districts going is astronomical. I haven't looked of late, but at one time it was roughly a third going to the admin side of the fence. It ends up being about a third, third, and a third. Third building, third admin, and a third on the teacher's end. Now, that may have changed, so if it has, let me know, but roughly that's pretty much where it is. A third on admin's far too much. Frankly, I don't think you should spend much more than about 10% on admin. If we're spending more than that, something's wrong. Something needs to be automated. We need better efficiencies. Something needs to take place to make that happen better than what it is with that much overhead. So, do we need more money per student? No. Do we need more efficiencies in the public school system? Absolutely. One of the ways, by the way, I would handle the public school system and the funding of, and you don't have to do it with the raising of property taxes, by the way, why do we have to provide transportation to get kids to and from school? Where is that written? In other words, buses. One of the first things I would do to help fund public schools is anybody that hops on that bus is going to get charged. Period. You don't like it, the kid can walk or drive them. One of the two. Well, that's going to hurt all the low-income families. Yeah, you know, sorry. Most low-income families aren't riding the bus anyways. There's other ways they get to school. They just do. They walk, they find other ways, and so on. And by the way, folks, some of you say, well, how do you know this? Because I watch. I pay attention. Go hang out, by the way, at most school bus stops and tell me how the kids arrive. The majority are not walking to the school bus. Mommy or daddy are hanging out in whatever car they're driving to the school bus and then getting Johnny or Sally off the bus, making sure they get on or off the, out of the car, onto the bus, and then they leave. And the same happens at night. Don't believe me? Go find any school bus stop and tell me I'm wrong. I know it's not every kid, but far too many. Mom and dad won't even let Johnny walk a half a mile to the bus stop or an eighth of a mile to the bus stop. In some cases, 100 yards to the bus stop. And again, how do I know that? Because you can observe this. Just watch it on any morning when kids are going to school or come. I don't see it on home because I'm on air, but watch any, you know, I get to watch some of this stuff in the mornings. Go watch it. So one of the ways I would handle this is I would either eliminate bus routes or charge, one of the two. And again, you could be nice. If you're in an affluent area, why are your kids riding the bus for free? Is it some sort of a right that you feel like you have to put your kid on the bus? I would look at certain districts and say, yeah, we're not running the bus there anymore, period. You drive your kid to school. You live in Cherry Hills? Yeah, there's no bus stop. You're done. Finished. We're not running a bus there anymore. You live where? Downtown Boulder? Yeah, no, we're not running a bus there anymore. Sorry, done. Get my drift, folks, on how this would work? You could still run buses in some of the inner city and low-income areas. Absolutely. And if you want to do it for free, fine. We could have a conversation along those lines. But could I cut the entire district of you know, the bus district and the cost of overnight? Absolutely. How much money would that free up when it comes to actually running the schools? A lot. A lot. Now, rural areas, do you still need to run a school bus? Good question. I don't know. You'd have to ask that. You'd have to have that conversation, ask that question. Now, how many kids in that area actually ride the bus? How many kids get dropped off by mom and dad? On the same token, is every bus running efficient? Or could we put a smaller bus on that route? There's all sorts of things that could get handled. I'm just talking one simple area of public schools. I haven't even got into maintenance of the building, the janitorial end of things, the admin side of the fence, what are you know, principals and admin making, on and on and on we go. I haven't even got down that list yet. I just came up with one thing, buses. And why is it, by the way, every single school you drive by, with but a few exceptions, look like a pit? They look awful. The lawn's not mowed. There's weeds everywhere. The thing is unkempt. You'd think that school was 100 years old by looking at it, but it might have only been built 10 years ago. Why is that? Why can't we do a better job of taking care of the things that we own as taxpayers? And I know the answer you're going to get back is, well, we can't afford to. Or if we put fertilizer on, some, you know, Looney Tune greenie's going to yell at you for putting fertilizer or weed control down. That's the other thing that happens. So we just let them look like crap instead, when they ought to look great. Same reason why I go look at some government buildings and say, why does it look like garbage? Of course, now you got to cut all these things. And the lawn, by the way, has to be cut with an electric mower and an electric trimmer and an electric this and an electric that, because you can't use any gas power anymore, because that was Governor Polis' great idea. Which, by the way, just added cost. So we're going to go back to the taxpayers to make sure we can get more money out of each one of them so we can spend more money per pupil, but at the same time raise our costs on maintenance of the grounds, if you would, because we now have to run everything electric. And yeah, that costs more. Folks, don't get me started. I could go down this path for hours, and most people in the school districts themselves would hate me for it, because I would eliminate jobs too, by the way. Overnight, I would eliminate jobs. I would subcontract all sorts of things, including janitorial, and you would no longer have a job if you're a janitor in a public school. I'd sub it all out, and I'd save money at the same time. There's so much of this we could change and save money and put money back into the pockets of the taxpayer, lower the mill levies, by the way, and still educate our students just fine. No one wants to have these conversations, though, because it's easier to just go back to the taxpayer and get more money. Raise the mill levy. Raise the property taxes. No problem. Something that's interesting, too, and I know I got to move on to Scott Garlis here in a second, but what's also interesting, I haven't heard a single word coming out of any of these school districts with the huge increases in property taxes we've just had. I'm about to pay mine next month. I know what mine went up. I know what all of yours have gone up. How come nobody's talking about the extra money they'll have coming in from that? Instead, it's always, we don't have enough money. No one is talking about the increased revenue that's going to be coming into every single school district in Colorado. Not a soul. Not a soul. Hi-Fi Plumbing is next. $100 off your next visit. Give Hi-Fi a call today. 877-WE-HI-FIVE.
Your holidays may have brought all sorts of unwanted gunk to your home plumbing, and Hi-Five can help fix it fast. Your guests are gone and you're smelling new smells from your drains or seeing sinks and showers drain slowly. It's time to call the professionals. Finding where the problem is can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with Hi-Five's cutting-edge tools and resources, they'll have those drains flowing again in no time. Hi-Five can take video of your main line and use the highest quality tools like digital augers and jetters to clear clogs so that you can get back to your day hassle-free. Mainline cleaning is dependent on your main access being cleared of furniture or appliances and is ultra-affordable. Tell Hi-Five you heard about it on Rush to Reason and you'll get $100 off the service. Get started today at klzradio.com/plumbing.
All right, keep your roof maintained. You can do that by having an annual roof inspection done from Roof Savers of Colorado. Call Dave today, 303-710-6916.
Every year, hailstorms ravage Colorado's Front Range, leaving gardens and roofs alike in shambles. From last year's storms alone, there are still an estimated 30 to 45% of roofs that are in need of replacements. That's where we come in. Hi, I'm Madison Hart.
And I'm Elizabeth Hart.
We here at Roof Savers Colorado take pride in helping homeowners make the best decision for their home and their roof.
Before we know it, hail season will arrive and your home will need a reliable, sturdy, and watertight roof. We will work with any insurance company to ensure you get the replacement you need. For over 23 years, we have specialized in both repairing and replacing your roof so that you can focus on what's important in life.
Don't let another storm season go by without replacing your roof, leaving your home vulnerable to leaks and at risk of further damage. Call Roof Savers Colorado today at 303-710-6916 or go to roofsaversco.com. That's 303-710-6916 or go to roofsaversco.com to have a free inspection done on your roof.
All right, Ridgeline Auto Brokers, two locations now to serve you, one in Boulder, one in Fort Collins. They'll work on your vehicle or sell you a new used car or both. RidgelineAutoBrokers.com is a place to go.
Are you in the market for a reliable car that won't break the bank? Do you need high-quality auto repair? Then look no further. Ridgeline Auto Brokers specializes in quality used cars that cost between $15,000 and $25,000, making them a great option for first-time drivers or anyone looking for a good deal. At Ridgeline, we pride ourselves on providing a transparent and hassle-free car buying experience. That's why we never charge any dealer fees. Plus, all of our vehicles are inspected by our team of ASE certified technicians. You can trust that the car you're buying is in excellent condition And remember, we can also service your vehicle after the sale. At Ridgeline, we offer competitive financing options for vehicle purchase or for vehicle repairs. Ridgeline now has two locations, one in Boulder and now a second location in Fort Collins, located at 1101 North College Avenue. Both locations offer full-service auto repair and a host of off-road accessories. Check out all our services at RidgelineAutoBrokers.com. Ridgeline, the smart way to buy or service your car.
As independent brokers, GIA Insurance does not work for any insurance company. They can shop the market and find you the best premium for the coverage that you need. Call 303-423-0162, extension 100, or go online to e-gia.com.
Now, back to Rush to Reason, presented by High Five Plumbing, where every call ends with a high five.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Scott Garlis joining us now on a Wednesday. Normally it's Thursday, but you know, last couple of weeks it's been Wednesday, which is fine. Scott, how are you today?
Hey, John, I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Better than the Port of Baltimore.
Yeah. There's definitely some interesting developments going on in my hometown.
And by the way, I'm glad that you're there. I think you give some good information. You gave me some great information and can shed some light on this that, frankly, I did not know, and there's all, as there always is, all sorts of conspiracies around this. You know, was it intentional? Was it a cyber attack? Blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
Scott, honestly, too early to tell. Personally, I've seen some videos and different things on this, and even some people that are experts in the maritime end of things, and even some folks that have been on those sorts of ships, or even in one case, a sister ship of that. And I will tell you that I honestly don't know what happened. Do I feel like it was intentional? Is it some sort of a black swan event? No, I don't believe that.
You're saying you don't think it's intentional?
I don't think it's intentional. I think it was an accident.
More of a one. Okay, so along those lines, since we last traded some information, I was talking with a buddy of mine this morning, and he has his he's a captain's license. He used to do some commercial vessel stuff in the Inner Harbor with teaching and other stuff.
Okay.
He started to get his license to be a tugboat captain.
All right.
In the Port of Baltimore. And when he started that and was like, you know what, this just isn't for me, and he stopped. But he still has a lot of friends because he worked with them for years in that industry, and he's been talking to them throughout this.
Got it.
And so he said it was literally the feedback he's gotten from these guys was, you know, so whenever a boat comes into the bay or big channel like this, the captains from overseas, they're not used to the shifting sands or how the channels work. So a bay pilot has to get on down around Norfolk, Virginia, where the ocean meets Chesapeake Bay.
Correct.
They take it all the way into the Port of Baltimore, and they dock the boats, do all this stuff. As a matter of fact, I've learned since then, this isn't quite on point, but the crews aren't allowed to leave these boats.
I pretty much knew, Scott, because they're foreign-based vessels. Yeah, they're not allowed off.
So these guys were I want to say they were in town for 48 hours, I think was about the time frame.
Usually it's enough to unload containers and put new ones back on, right?
Yeah, some of these boats can be there for a half a day.
Right.
But this boat, 2 days. Apparently he told me the feedback he's gotten so far was the docking captain, they pulled off the pier. They were going, and then all of a sudden they just completely lost control of the boat. It was a power failure. They radioed the Maryland Department of Transportation and said, we've lost control. There could be a collision imminent with the bridge. And from everything he's heard, it just sounds like it was a one-off thing.
Right.
And it just so happened to hit the boat. Now, you know, this bridge was built in 1977, and back then they didn't really build these barriers around the piers that hold up the main support structure. These days, if you look at newer bridges, you'll see that they have big, like, rock sort of islands that go around these things to try to prevent things like this from happening.
Right. The other thing that I've heard, too, folks, I wanted, since we're talking about this, kind of dispel some of this. I've heard all sorts of things or seen things on social media, Scott, where it's like, you know, these things all have backup systems. The minute one thing falls off, there's another thing that hops right back up, so on and so forth. Yet I've heard others, like who you're talking to, that will say, you know, people don't really understand that that industry, that particular vessel even, these things are run on a shoestring. There's not a ton of maintenance that goes into them. They're barely worthy enough to even enter into U.S. ports and seas, if you would. In other words, they don't have all of the safety things that you normally would have. They have to get around the Jones Act, by the way, to make some of that stuff happen. As you know, I'm sure, Scott, and most people in Colorado don't even know what the Jones Act is. But that's a whole other conversation. Reality is, these things aren't necessarily up to the speed that most people would think. And while a lot of them may have emergency things that come right back on and help the ship, you know, navigate, that's not always the case, as we saw in this particular example.
I mean, what's crazy about it, too, so I went onto the GPS data. You know, you can find this and track it all online. I want to say this thing was doing about 8 knots, roughly, and that's like 10 miles an hour. But it's a 900-foot boat. And so that generated like 30 million pounds of force.
Yeah, the thing's huge. And, you know, somebody's like, why didn't they drop anchor? I've even seen things where, you know, they dropped anchor and then that spun the ship around. I've read enough and know enough and have heard enough, Scott, that dropping anchor on a vessel that heavy at 10 miles an hour would have been like you and I hanging dental floss out the window of our car.
It would. The anchor probably would have snapped so quickly.
It wouldn't have done a single thing, folks.
And it literally, we're talking about like a 1 degree shift in the course of the boat in the harbor. And that's, you know, that's the difference between going through the two major support pylons and striking one of them.
Correct. Now, along all these lines, because this is really the other reason why I wanted to have you on, because you're in that area, because there's all sorts of conspiracies. This is going to kill trade. It's going to kill this. It's going to kill that. I've also read other things from people back in that area saying, yeah, well, it may have some impact, but there's other ports things can come into. It's very vibrant there. They'll figure out ways around this. Yes, this will be closed for a while, but the reality is they'll get things back up and running as quickly as they can. You're there. What's the scuttlebutt on all of that?
Yeah, look, the scuttlebutt is basically like this has gone from a search and rescue mission to, you know, they now want to, it's been a couple days or day, they want to get the Port of Baltimore back open. They want to, they said this evening, they want to start, they don't think they can find anybody else. They recovered two bodies and they want to start pulling things out and getting the Port of Baltimore.
Gotcha.
Now, so the expectation is, I think, you know, talking to some local business buddies, some local commercial real estate buddies, you know, the concern more, it's there's really not a sense that this is going to be a major league national problem. Look, it's the biggest seaport, the eighth biggest seaport on the East Coast.
Right.
It's supposedly the 11th in the country. You can look at some other data that puts it down more around 20. But if you look at the overall volume of business that goes to the Port of Baltimore, it's not going to be the end of the world if it's shut down for a while. I think they're going to try to get it open as quickly as they can. But in 2014, there was a group with the investment money from Redwood Capital. They built a whole new port facility, 3,100 acres worth of land, where Bethlehem Steel used to have a steel or an iron plant, manufacturing plant in Sparrows Point, and they turned it into a seaport with two terminals.
Wow.
Now, a couple of the big things that, and so that is on the Atlantic side of the bridge. So that's in front of the bridge.
Okay.
So that is not shut off. Now, they've stopped anything right now, but that port could work. It's got two terminals. Hmm. What it cannot do is offload major league containers. But it's the home to where Amazon has logistics operations there. FedEx does, Home Depot does, BMW does, who else? Volkswagen. So Baltimore is the number one port for automobile traffic in the U.S.
Right.
But a lot of that traffic is foreign cars. VW in particular, the 850,000 cars that came through Baltimore last year, 100,000 of those were Volkswagen.
Okay.
So now, what I also came to find out was this port, it can wield traffic coming off and on boats. This port can handle that no problem. So anything like automobiles, another big thing is farm equipment and light trucks are also big things in Baltimore. That could all be handled at this port, no big deal. And as a matter of fact, I learned this afternoon, the city of Baltimore, the state of Maryland, the federal government have gone to these guys and said, hey, look, we need to start making changes right now to get all the traffic we can through here.
Got it.
So the bigger concern is for the city of Baltimore and the state of Maryland, what's going to happen to them in terms of jobs and revenue, not as much for the rest of the country. And then the one other thing I wanted to say, too, like I saw a crazy report out there saying that this bridge coming down shuts off traffic on the I-95 corridor all up and down the East Coast. That is completely wrong. This bridge spans the I-695, which is a beltway that goes around Baltimore City. If you pulled up a map, you would see this. The I-95 bridge is two bridges further up the Patapsco River, and it's totally fine.
Okay. So, again, as always, tons of misinformation out there. Be careful, guys, what you see, what you read, what you pass on. Part of why I wanted to have you on, Scott, and the timing ended up working out perfect, having you today with this just happening, really not yesterday, but we heard about it, you know, yesterday. Yeah. It's good to know because, again, especially those of us like in Colorado where we're landlocked, we have no idea what this stuff looks like or how the roads are even routed around it. We don't have a foggiest idea.
Yeah, exactly. And it's – so, yeah, the one person I heard talking about this called it the I-94 corridor. I was like, all right, this person has no idea what they're talking about. But I-95 –
It's actually like the 695, meaning it's a route around the 95, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay.
And so – they're easy conduits to it banned the West Shore and the North Shore and the South Shore, but it's not, you know, it's easy to get around. It'll add a little bit of time if you had to go all the way around to the other side, but most of the industry and the warehouse stuff is all on the side where this big port we're talking about, Trade Point Atlantic, is located. So there are definitely some easy workarounds.
Okay.
It should be fine.
Okay. So when it comes to stocks and all that kind of stuff, how have the markets responded to all of this?
Yesterday, you know, the markets dropped a bit. Some of the automobile companies got sold off in particular. But, you know, Ford, GM, and Stellantis all came out and quantified it. Actually, all the automakers pretty much said it shouldn't be a big deal for any of us. We can deal with this. You know, they're going to reroute stuff.
Right.
You know, the one thing I would worry about is Baltimore is the number two coal exporter in the country.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe that creates delays with shipping coal overseas. But a lot of the traffic out of Baltimore is not domestic traffic. It's overseas traffic.
I see.
So I would worry about, like, coal prices in Europe. They might go up because they don't really talk about it, but Europe still burns a lot of coal.
Got it. Makes total sense. And if you look at the map, I can see what you're talking about. If they get Sparrows Point really rolling like it needs to, this is a no-brainer.
Yeah, and look, if there was somebody that was really up to something nefarious and wanted to shut down the entire port of Baltimore, if they went a little further south in the Bay, Chesapeake Bay toward Annapolis, they would take out the Bay Bridge.
Yeah, I see that.
That would be a major problem.
Yeah. So, again, just killing all the conspiracy theorists, that's how you do it. Scott, man, as always, I appreciate it. How do folks find you, sir?
Yeah, sure. Come to marketwise.com. Come check out all of our free and paid products. We're there to help the self-oriented investor. Otherwise, follow me at C. Scott Garlis on LinkedIn and on Twitter.
Awesome. Scott, as always, man, appreciate you very much.
John, thanks so much
you
for
bet.
Your time.
Have a great night. I appreciate it. Great information, by the way. Jim, you're next. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, listen, that anchor serves one purpose. It's to pull the anchor chain out of the anchor locker. It's the anchor locker that would hold and lay on the surface of the bottom of the ocean that holds ships in place. And you never do it moving forward.
Yeah. So, in other words, these guys saying that they dropped anchor and that's what made the ship turn abruptly or full of crap.
Well, on top of that, when the port of Baltimore, the Coast Guard makes every ship, while they're still out in the ocean, do a full astern test to prove that they can stop and go in reverse.
Got it.
And when that occurs, they have multiple generator issues. But they don't turn both propellers on a two-propeller ship in reverse. They only do one propeller, and that provides a great strain on these generators, and they have generator failures that happen all the time.
I see.
So, and that is part of their calculation as to whether they have tugboats just at the pier or tugboats all the way in. If they don't let them in the harbor, if they can't back
I
up
see.
And if they can't pass their full astern test and they have a generator that operates. And these boats are like a sheet of drywall sitting up in the air with a 5-mile-an-hour wind. You and I would never walk out of our garage with a sheet of drywall with
true.
A 5-10-mile-an-hour wind.
True.
It would blow us over.
True.
They're truly just sails.
So your thoughts on this being an accident or intentional, Jim?
Absolutely. And it was. There's no such thing as an accident in the legal world.
True.
It was an incident.
True.
And,
incident. Good. Yeah, good way of saying it. Okay, so it's an incident. Good way of saying it.
And there will be tremendous, tremendous liability. And I venture to say that in reality, that it wasn't 95. It wasn't 295, 495. It was the 695 feeder loop.
Right.
Okay,
that's
so
right.
There are parallel paths.
That's right.
I honestly don't think it needs to be replaced.
Okay. Jim, appreciate it, man. Great information between him and Scott. I think, again, going back to what even Andy and I were talking about yesterday, and there's a lot of folks out there that, by the way, are repeating things they shouldn't. They're throwing things up on social media, casting doubt as to whether this was an incident, as Jim just said, or an accident versus something that was done intentional. So all of my listeners, please, don't be one of those knuckleheads. Please don't do that. Reality is it makes us look really stupid when we do. I like the fact of everything that not only Scott said, but then Jim just added to that as well. And I think Scott, by the way, said it all. If this was going to be an intentional act to really shut down that particular port, there are other bridges, the one that he mentioned specifically, that they could have actually shut down. And, you know, terrorist activities, whatever. You know, there's people out there talking about this thing being a cyber attack, being this, being that. Folks, it's absolute hogwash. And please don't be one of those people that spread false rumors where you don't know what happened. And there's enough of that going on social media already. YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. I mean, you name it. There's people out there putting things out. And the so-called experts, which you always have to wonder, are they really, versus somebody like Jim that just called in, or Scott that's actually really on site. I will rely way more on Jim and Scott, who I know, and I talk to Jim plenty on air. I will rely more on them than I will anybody on social media throwing stuff out there that, by the way, they probably have no idea what's really going on when it's said and done. Affordable interest mortgage is next. Kurt Rogers wants to help you with your mortgage, and he is my broker. He'd love to help you as well. 720-895-0500.
Are you waiting for rates to go down? Are all of your monthly payments too much? No room for taxes or insurance increases? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage. Do you have rates in the 3s and 4s on your mortgage? We can help you lower your total monthly payments by $700 to $1,200 a month. Money saved is money earned. 720-895-0500, Affordable Interest Mortgage. Have you purchased a home in the last 2 years? With rates down 1% to 1.5%, start saving hundreds now. Take AIM and let our experience save you money. 720-895-0500. Have you taken out an FHA or VA loan? With rates dropping, they offer a streamlined loan that requires no income verification, no increase in current payoff, no appraisal required, and payments $250 to $400 a month lower. And you may also be able to skip two payments. Take AIM, 720-895-0500. We have been saving homeowners thousands since 2001. It's like giving yourself a raise. Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. That's 720-895-0500. NMLS 217147, regulated by DORA, equal credit lender.
All right, up next, Golden Eagle Financial. In all things financial, like we were just talking to Scott on, if you want somebody directly that you can sit down face-to-face, give Al Smith a call today. Golden Eagle Financial, find him at klzradio.com.
Al Smith of Golden Eagle Financial will help you respond to rising inflation so your retirement plans aren't deflated. You're watching the cost of goods rise steadily and worried that your retirement won't be enough. Al Smith will be your strategic guide, helping you analyze past performance and interpret the market for your risk tolerance and expenses to foresee any potential areas to improve. And Al isn't all charts and graphs. He's a holistic planner, and he'll get to know you first to find out what your goals and unique circumstances are. After he understands what you want your retirement to look like, Al Smith will run a stress test on your portfolio against historic markets and strategically interpret how it'll react in given scenarios. Get started with Al Smith of Golden Eagle Financial and be certain your nest egg will grow and maintain your purchasing power in a down economy. Contact Al at Golden Eagle Financial for a free consultation today at klzradio.com/money. Investment advisory services offered through Brookstone Capital Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor. BCM and Golden Eagle Financial Limited are independent of each other. Insurance products and services are not offered through BCM, but are offered and sold through individually licensed and appointed agents.
All right, Cub Creek Heating and Air Conditioning, they're a Rheem Certified Pro partner, but they can work on any system that you may have. Give them a call today if you need anything at all. It's Cub Creek Heating and Air Conditioning. Find them at klzradio.com.
Cub Creek Heating and AC knows that solving your home's heating and cooling needs can be confusing. The energy industry can be complicated, and Cub Creek will help you navigate through it so you owe as little as possible. Denver is mostly served by a large power company, but many of the towns around it are served by smaller power companies, all with different policies and regulations. The team at Cub Creek understands these regulations so they can best advise you on what will save you the most. They walk customers through the options step by step, always keeping your overall net cost in mind. Most companies say they'll get you the biggest rebate, but sell you the most expensive equipment, so you lose money in the end. And Cub Creek isn't a commission-based company, so there's no chance you'll be upsold. They will give you all the options, and you choose how to proceed. Learn the facts and save money with Rheem Pro Partners Cub Creek Heating and AC today by going to klzradio.com/HVAC.
All right, Veteran Windows Indoors is next. 45% off entry doors, and the labor to install is at their cost. Call them today. Find them at klzradio.com.
Veteran Windows and Doors believes you are smart to get multiple bids for your windows and doors before you sign any contract. Dave Bancroft, the owner of Veteran Windows and Doors, is confident he will surpass his peers in installation, customer service, and warranties, as well as the fairest prices. Dave hears people complain about the large window and door companies' empty promises with not servicing their needs and lack of knowledge about the products. Veteran Windows and Doors' commitment is to ensure that their customers know exactly what they are buying, from window rating and efficiency levels to real price comparisons, and they always respond to their customers within 24 hours. Wait to sign a contract until you get your final bid from Veteran Windows and Doors, and work with a company that values integrity and stands behind their work and product, guaranteed. Veteran Windows and Doors. Find them at klzradio.com/windows.
It's time to leave your safe space. This is Rush to Reason on KLZ 560.
All right, there is one thing that I do believe will happen out of what happened at the bridge, and you're already starting to see the workings of this now. Now, keep in mind, as I said yesterday, all of what happened on that ship and the destruction of that bridge will be covered by insurance. Exactly how, most likely each person with a container, each company with a container on there will have some sort of liability when this is all said and done. That's our maritime laws. I talked about that yesterday with Andy. Now, on the same token, you saw Joe Biden come out and say, we are committed to rebuilding that bridge. In other words, your tax dollars. That's what Uncle Joe said. Now, this is where I feel it gets interesting. Like all Democrats are, never let a crisis go to waste. So when you hear Uncle Joe say, yep, we're going to rebuild that bridge, what does that mean exactly? Pretty much what Joe said. Keep in mind, funding has to be approved by the House. The president can't just spend money. So when he says we're going to spend money on that bridge, I guarantee you there will be billions upon billions of other things that get money spent on, because when they put that sort of a bill through, they'll tack on all sorts of other pork like they always do. So again, Democrats never let anything go to waste crisis-wise. They'll just dovetail into what Joe said they would do with rebuilding that bridge. never mind the fact that they're going to get money coming back when it's all said and done from the insurance companies. But regardless, will they tack other things on and actually have more funding when it's all said and done? And is this a way to get more pet projects handled by Democrats? Absolutely. That's the only there's tragedy because of the deaths, but that's the real tragedy that's going to happen when this is all said and done, is your tax dollars will be wasted on other things outside of just handling the bridge. Mark my words on that one. We'll be back tomorrow. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560.